Hi, today is December 9th, 2018. This is Todd Ogasawara. I'm with my good friend John Westfall from Mobiviews Podcast number 279. Yeah, that sounds right. 279. Got quite a few of them under our belt, John.
We do.
Yeah.
Was 279 the number of episodes of Star Trek Next Generation, or was that... 279 was something. Maybe that was 179. There's some series that I think went to 279, but...
Well, let's see. About 20-something episodes per season for Star Trek Next Generation. They're on for 8 seasons.
Yeah, it's going to go to 178 or 179, depending on if you count. But I want to say someone had 279 episodes. But
man, that'd be a lot. That'd be
would be.
Well over a decade of episodes. In any case, from our banter, you can tell we actually have no tech stuff to talk about. To our fives of listeners. Okay, but a couple of things, huh?
We have some updates and some rants and some things like that. So,
and some comments. Maybe not so much rant from me, but... more of a disappointing comment. Okay, so item number one is a pro tip. If you're an Audible subscriber, as I am, John, you're not an Audible listener, are you?
I have been for a while, but I have not been an active subscriber in a few years.
Okay. Well, if you are an active subscriber, and I subscribe to the annual plan, which I think is a gold plan, so I can get 12 books for, you know, a flat fee. Anyway, one of the things Audible started a number of months ago, I want to say maybe 5 or 6 months ago, is every month they provide a selection of Audible shorts. And a short is a Audible book of between 1 and, say, 4 hours long. And from this selection, as a subscriber, you can pick 2 for free, no additional charge. So that's a really nice... There's been some really wonderful, wonderful short content pieces that they've made available, including an original piece from Billy Crystal... And, well, just a bunch of stuff, but that one kind of sticks out in my mind because it was so good. And this month, in addition to the two free selections you can make out of, I think, about 5 or 6, they offer a free third thing, which is called Jingle Bell Pop, How to Make a Holiday Hit. It's kind of a pop psych thing about, you know, how to create music that becomes a holiday hit song. And if you've been on YouTube and wandering around there, you may have seen some of these things about the theory about which chords to use and progressions and melodies and all that kind of stuff. But at any rate, the two free titles I selected this month, if anyone's curious, one is Christmas Eve 1914, which is based on a true account of the Christmas Eve during World War I, where everybody stopped fighting, which is kind of amazing. And the second one I chose is Alien, Out of the Shadows. And yes, it is based on the movie Alien. So basically, Audible is doing a bunch of shorts. Like, this one's 4 hours long. Christmas Eve 1914, I think it's about an hour. Alien, Out of the Shadows is about a 4 hour long book. So it's pretty short for books. Most novels are 8 to, you know, whatever number of hours long. I've had a couple that are like 30 hours.
Quite long.
But in case, so they're redoing, you know, with Ripley and the whole thing, and so I thought, that'd be kind of interesting. So I got that. So that's your pro tip if you're an Audible subscriber, as I am. I've really been enjoying the free monthly Audible short selection. Okay, the next one is kind of, was confusing. So I read an article on Google's own blog that they're collaborating on the future of audio news for the assistant, and that they're also going to be doing video, I think. So I went to my Google Assistant. I have the Lenovo. It works on either the Google audio devices, like the Google Home, Google Home Mini. It also works on their display devices, like the Lenovo Smart Display I bought a while back. By the way, you know, I thought I paid a pretty good deal. I paid like $229 for mine, I think. Normally it's $250. Got a free Google Home Mini with it. I saw it at Costco for like $150. It's not such a good deal anymore, but it was at the time. Any rate, so in addition to playing audio news, if you have a Google Home type device with a video or with a video display, you can start getting some video clips. Initially, I thought that if you said, you know, the keyword and play the news versus just news, it would show video news clips. But it turns out what happens is it just happened to be that when I tested it, it showed the video news clips first because I had listened to some of the audio stuff earlier and it just continued on. But you can go to the Google Assistant or Google Home app on your Android device or iOS device, I guess, and select video news clips to be at the start. So it's like Reuters TV and I think CNN and a few others. It's kind of neat. You know, I kind of do like to have video news playing in the background when I'm doing a certain number of things. So that was kind of neat. And basically all you got to do after you set it up for that is say, okay, Google, play the news. And it should fire up. So right now, I don't know if you can hear it.
From Reuters TV, US at 9 a.m. today.
So it's a 5-minute news briefing.
From Reuters TV, here are the top stories.
Yeah.
John Kelly's the next staffer.
Okay, Google, stop. So anyway, kind of a cool feature that I happen to like a lot. And my Pixel just decided he wanted to talk to me too. anyway, so you can choose some video news sources and you can sort what happens, what bubbles to the top. So I just have all the video stuff going first so I can see what's going on in the news. And I'll post a link to that. Okay, you have something you wanted to add, John.
Yeah, a couple of things. FaceTime now in the latest version of iOS 12.1 has the live photo button back.
Yeah.
Plus, they've also done a couple of UI tweaks. I really wish Apple would be happy with the UI for FaceTime because it seems every time they add new features to FaceTime, they decide to change the UI quite a bit. and this is always – it's always fun, especially with my parents who don't use FaceTime that often, to try to get them to understand where the flip camera button is.
Oh, yeah.
To use the back camera. And, of course, it changes every iOS release. So
sure, why not?
Once they learn one, it doesn't – carry over. But the live photo feature, if you've never used it, and this is a feature that Apple, I don't think, has ever fully committed to. In fact, I'm really glad that they actually put it in the release notes because maybe that means it's a real thing that they want to keep doing. But this will allow you to take quick live photos, which are basically stills or little short bits of your FaceTime conversation. So
yeah.
I especially like using these when I'm FaceTiming with friends or with my godson and my nieces and things like that, because, you know, wave goodbye and you can hit that button right at that moment and get a nice live photo out of it.
Yeah, so, I like that. I've never heard of it till you said mentioned it to me before the podcast, but it seems like a really neat feature.
Well, like I said, it's one that they've, I don't think, ever fully committed to because it would appear and then it would disappear and then, you know, now it's back and I think they're ready to commit to it because they've actually put it in the release notes as a feature. I think before it was just kind of a silent, let's see if people care about this sort of feature. So that is my good thing about iOS 12.1 FaceTime. Of course, group FaceTime is also cool, but I haven't had enough people to take advantage of it yet. So I cannot report results on group FaceTime just yet.
I have a feeling. I should try Google FaceTime. Now, do you need iOS? I guess you have to have iOS 12 to be running group FaceTime. Is that right?
I believe so.
Okay.
I don't know what happens if you're trying to FaceTime with people not on iOS 12.
Okay. Because, you know, I have some iPads, for example, which cannot be upgraded to anything. Some of my older devices.
Where do you want
them? Well, I keep my iPad Pro 9.7 on iOS 10 so I can keep playing Civilization Revolution. But that's, you know, my choice. But I do have a couple old things like an iPad 2. I think the iPad, you know, which is really the iPad 3, which can't be upgraded. Okay, so my it's not really a rant. It's just kind of more of a disappointing sigh. Is about Google Android Call Screen, which I have on my Pixel 2. And I thought, incorrectly, that it was smart enough to kind of hold a conversation with a human that's kind of calling you. Not kind of, that is calling you. And I thought, you know, it could ask for the name and why are you calling and all that automatically. So if you're in a meeting and you can't, or you're driving, you can't take a call, you know, it would kind of sort things out for whoever's calling you, especially if it's one of those awful telemarketers. But it turns out that it's not. It's more like a sound effect machine that radio stations use, you know, to get the little explosions and sound effects and things. And you got to press the button while answering. And I guess it could work. I mean, you know, if you're in a meeting and you were not speaking at the time somebody's calling you during a meeting, at least you could have your phone at your direction, carry on a little conversation. So let's see if I can get this thing working to show you. So I'm calling my Android, my Pixel 2 from I'm calling my Pixel 2 from my iPhone. And I'm going to tap screen call.
Hi, the person you're calling is using a screening service from Google and will get a copy of this conversation. Go ahead and say why you're calling.
I'm calling to test call screen. And at this point, it just stops, right? And I have to say something like,
just so it's clear, go ahead and say more about why you're calling.
And so what I did is I pressed a button that says, tell me more. And now I'm going to press a button that says, is it urgent?
Do you need to get a hold of them urgently?
And that's pretty, well, I can say, it'll say something like,
they can't talk right now, but they'll give you a call later. Thanks, and goodbye.
And that last one I pressed actually gave that little message saying, hey, you know, I can't talk to you right now, or I can't talk to myself right now, and and hung up right after saying that. So I didn't have to like, you know, drop the phone on the person, which was me, so not too bad. I didn't feel bad. But there was a lot of button pushing. Now, the good thing is that, like I said, if you are in a meeting and you know, you want to get more information from the caller, you can. But if you're in a car, I don't think you can do that. Well, you can't press the... Well, you could if it's mounted and you can see it. But I still think that's dangerous. You shouldn't do that. So it doesn't fit the use case for somebody calling you while they're driving, in my opinion. On the other hand, you know, the call screen, you can't activate the call screen automatically anyway. It's something you have to say, activate call screen. You press a button to do that.
Yeah, initially when you were playing with that before we started recording, I thought that it was issuing those commands kind of on its own.
Oh, I shouldn't have told you.
Based on what it was hearing.
Yeah.
And so
you're kind of impressed.
We sort of thought, oh, that's kind of nice. It can listen, and if it thinks it's something important, it'll ask, is this urgent? But no, that was just...
That was
magic
just me.
On your end.
Yeah, that was me pushing buttons. So it has some limited usefulness. You know, like the one I can think of is if you're in a meeting and you can't answer the phone and you still want to get a bit more information and provide some feedback to the caller, okay, that's useful. You know, I can press buttons, although I can't take notes while I'm pressing the button. So, you know. I was hoping for something more AI. You know, or with AI, to just say, you know, hi, what's your name? And you would say, John. And I would say, why are you calling? And you would say, just, you know, need to set up an appointment. And, you know, say, what time? You know, I was hoping to do all of that, but no.
Yeah.
That's not what happens. Okay, so not so much a rant, it's more of a sigh of disappointment. So, you have a rant, apparently.
Well, I have a little bit of a rant. So, about the last year and a half, I have used Outlook on my iPhone as my primary email client.
I find that fascinating. I can't imagine how you do that.
I honestly believe I'm the only person on the planet that focused inbox works well for.
Oh, I hate that. I turned it off automatically.
Everyone complains about it, but it actually works for me, so I go with it.
Wow.
So anyway, one of the things that came out this week was that iOS Outlook is going to get an update, and it's going to include some UI tweaks and a dark mode and avatars within the inbox and just sort of stuff like that. Right now, Outlook, as you might not think of, because if you're used to desktop Outlook, this is going to sound strange, it includes email, calendar, and that's it.
Okay.
It does not include tasks. Which you might be thinking, well, there's Microsoft To Do, but every time I try Microsoft To Do, it just sucks. Like, the UI never works the way I want it to work, and it's hard to create things with definite due dates and start dates. And so all I really want, Microsoft, is integrate tasks in Outlook, because after all, that's where they're at, in Outlook on the desktop and Outlook web, and they're called tasks, they're not called to-dos. So put them where they belong. But, I think I am the only person that actually uses Outlook Focused Inbox. You are not a fan, huh?
No. I turn it off every time. Anytime I install Outlook anywhere on a mobile device or any place else, it just drives me bonky. Although, you know, I will say that I'm one of the few people who likes category tabs in Gmail. So, you know, different strokes for different folks.
Yeah, and that's the weirder thing. I turned off Gmail's priority inbox a long time ago for most of my Gmail accounts. I use it here and there, but it's really not what I like. But for some reason, like I said, the Outlook focus tasks, I can or focused email actually works pretty well for me. So maybe I am just very, very predictable and it knows what it should and shouldn't prioritize for me. Or maybe I'm just weird.
Well, you know, it might be that, you know, it's the kind of content that you and I get are so different. I assume you get real email in your Outlook. And for me, Outlook, you know, which is Microsoft's Office 365 mail content, it's mostly spam. Well, not spam. What's the in-between? It's kind of like useful spam. Basically, for me, it's press releases, notifications from Microsoft Store and airlines. I have it hooked into an account that I use for product registration. So I get information about products I've registered, like Rogue Amoeba, which provides audio hijack, which is what we're using right now to record this podcast. And so I don't have like real people. I get receipts and things in there. I don't have people I know sending me email here that I need to respond to. It's sort of a one-way thing, like, oh, that's interesting, you know. And I've got a couple of accounts that are hooked into Outlook using the now defunct, what was it called, Outlook Premium or something, where you could, So, although it's still working, so I'm not sure how long it's going to work. It's just kind of scary. So like I said, I don't have real people. Well, let me rephrase it. I don't have real people I care about emailing me here.
See, I have a good number of real people, and I also am on a good number of distribution lists. And so it's a great way to keep all the distribution lists sort of off doing their own thing and only focusing on the stuff I really need to know about.
Yeah. So I should note, I went into settings in my Outlook for iOS, and I do not see anything with dark mode, so I guess I'm still running the old version.
I don't think the new version has actually dropped yet. I think just, in a very weird mode for this day and age, they're just talking about, hey, we're going to have a new version.
But not actually release it.
Yeah. Hmm. Although one thing I will say, if you've never tried Outlook on iOS, this might be one reason why you would want it and actually set it up, even if you don't use it as your primary client. And that is simply the dead simple ability to add files from cloud storage to email. So many, you know, you can hook it up to all of your cloud storage, your Dropbox, OneDrive. And then when someone says, hey, I lost that, and you think, oh, great, when I get back to my desk, I've got to send them that file. Nope, if it's in cloud storage, you can just say, here you go. You can either insert a link to the cloud storage item where it'll share out to them, or actually insert the file itself. So that's a very nice feature that I use quite a bit, because as a college professor, I am often sending students copies of the syllabus to remind them that they already knew about something.
You don't just point them to a web page with the syllabus on it?
I do, but sometimes, to be very specific, I will see page 14 of the attached.
Wow. Yeah. How long is your syllabus?
Oh, it is epic, because I craft a syllabus that it's hard to get out of.
I have never seen a 14-page long syllabus in my entire life.
I will send you one of my copies of it.
I would like to see this.
You will find it interesting.
Okay. I will say one thing I do like about Outlook for iOS, by the way, and that is I can delete email on it.
Mm-hmm.
Gmail only lets you archive stuff. And maybe it's a semantic difference versus an actual, like archive is deleting in Google's worldview, but I don't like that it's called archive. I just want to get rid of that email. It's just, you know, whatever, and I don't care about it anymore, never will. Inbox seems to let me delete it. Here's a question for you. Okay, so I'm looking at my Outlook for iOS setup. Focus inbox is turned off, as it should be. Organized by thread. Are you a thread person or non-thread person?
I'm a thread person.
Yeah, me too. And we're two of the few, apparently, because I think most of the people I know don't like threads, and I don't understand why. So don't you want to see all of the conversation in place? Nope.
Okay. I think it has a lot to do with when you first started, like, you and I, we're weird that we are the age we are using email that we don't like, that we're okay with threads.
Yeah.
Because most people I know, they want it to be like it was when they started with email. And that's, just, I think, also the same reluctance
just chronological.
To go to focused inboxes, because it's, no, I want to see everything chronologically from the last time to now. Which I can understand that, but...
So I'm halfway in between.
And I fully, I guess, have embraced our new AI overlords and said, sure, give me just, you know, the bare essentials and I'll go with that.
Yeah, so, you know, I I'm glad you started talking about this because I didn't realize this until, you know, I've been using Outlook for iOS for, I don't know, however many years it's been out, but I've never really looked at it. And I didn't realize that you have that it has add-ins for all kinds of stuff.
Yep.
A lot of things I don't care about, like email stickers by Mochi Lala. But also, it's automatically checked Evernote, which is, I don't know what that means.
Evernote. At some point, you connected Outlook to it, and that might have been Outlook on your desktop.
And I don't use Jira, but there's Jira for Outlook, which I find interesting. And whole bunch of stuff. Smart Cloud Connect for Salesforce, if you're a Salesforce user. And I don't know what iPlanner Pro it is, but that sounds interesting. I don't know how to pronounce this. Giphy? G-I-P-H-Y? I know what it is. I don't know how to pronounce it, I guess. FedEx Tracking by iGlobe, so that sounds like a third-party thing. And something called Concur Expense, which, you know, if I did a lot of traveling, which I don't do anymore. Oh, and Microsoft Translator. Oh, I should add this. I can translate spam I get. I'm adding it right now. Yeah. What's Rike? W-R-I-K-E. That sounds so familiar. W-R-I-K-E. I don't know what any of this stuff is. Oh, online project management software. Huh. What does it cost? I mean, it's not free, obviously. But, oh, you can get started for free. That's pretty neat. Plans.
We have just opened an entire new world of possibilities for Todd.
Yeah, so Rike, W-R-I-K-E, is a project management. I mean, I don't know what it means by project management. I know what project management is, but, you know, I don't know if it's just a collaboration thing like Microsoft Teams or it's more like Microsoft Project or somewhere in between. But there's a 5-user account for free. Simple shared task list. I mean, what I'm wondering is can you do, probably not. You probably can't do like resource leveling and Gantt charts and, you know, PERT and all that stuff. But... Oh, and it syncs with GitHub and Jira. That's pretty interesting. What else is on here? See, this is why I like talking to John. Because he tells me stuff I never knew about, and then he leads me to things I never thought about, and makes me look at things that I wouldn't care about.
The reason I started using Outlook on iOS is because it's how you can get push Gmail. Without using the Gmail client. And I have the Gmail client installed, but I've never really particularly thought of it as a good email client. It's a little slow in my opinion. A little too big and weird looking. So I like Outlook a little bit better for that. But I have surprised myself because for a long time I was just a stock mail client user. And now I use Outlook on iOS and I'm pretty happy about it.
That's interesting. You know, I in general, I am a stock mail user. By stock mail, I mean the iOS mail app. But I've noticed that it's really slow in getting mail recently, and I don't understand why. And so at least for Gmail, I use the Gmail client. Not exclusively, but if I think I have email coming in that, you know, I need to know about, I'll check the Gmail client first.
Yeah, I find it very strange that Outlook on iOS works really well with Gmail, and Outlook on the desktop works horribly with it.
Yeah.
And I also don't understand why Outlook on iOS can do a unified inbox, but Outlook client still can't do unified inbox.
You mean the consumer client, right? The one for...
Yeah. So...
Wait, let's take... Yeah, go ahead.
I'm trying to think if the Mac version of Outlook can do a unified inbox. I'll fire it up here and take a look. But I know the Windows version still, you have to swap between accounts. You can't just have one view that has all of your inbox items in it.
You know, I have Office 365, you know, for like 5 users and multiple installs. But I haven't installed Office on a Mac in ages. Is it any good now? It used to be terrible. I mean,
it's actually... pretty good, and I actually just pulled it up, and it does have unified inbox. I just don't use it that often on my Mac because
John just froze and then he unfroze. So what you were saying that I last heard, John, is you don't use Outlook on the Mac much anymore, and then you clipped.
Yeah, I usually It actually is a pretty decent client on the Mac, but I usually just use Apple Mail.
Mm. And, okay, and with that, we've almost reached 30 minutes with nothing really much to say or talk about.
And I have one final interesting tip.
Good.
Earlier this week, in my office on our campus that shouldn't have lost information needed a copy of something from 3 years ago. They you know, and changing personnel, no one knew what this was from 3 years back. And right. So I heard about this. I fired up archive.org, and I went to the Wayback Machine, and I found their published website from 3 years ago that had it on there. And so for those of you that go, gee, if we could only look at the website from 2 years ago, we would have that information right there.
Yeah.
Remember that Wayback does exist on archive.org.
Yep. Archive, which is now owned by Amazon, I think. Is that right? And you can go way further back than 2 years. I think you can go back like almost 20, maybe more than 20 years. I'm not sure. But
yep, I was then looking up the first home pages of my university's website from 20 years ago, just because that was fun to look at.
Yeah, and for the Fives of Risk listeners who are amongst my fellow MSN launch team members, we were contractors. See, it launched in 1994. I wonder how far back it goes. I'll take a look. MSN Computing Central. Anyway, that was a long time ago, and I should go check. Okay,
MSN.
John.
MSN.com, the earliest they have is 1996.
Oh, that's not bad,
October 22nd, 96 is the oldest MSN.com.
That's pretty amazing, though. That's 22 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I should go take a look. If you look for MSN.com Computing... No, we weren't called Computing Central. What were we called? That was a later name. Might have been Computing Central. You can see my face. They actually had a professional artist do a caricature of all of us, and that was our identity on MSN.com back then. Okay, so we've probably got maybe one more podcast before you go on your super secret winter mission again.
Yeah, I believe next week we'll be able to podcast, so we'll see everyone then.
All righty. We'll talk to you then. And to Jason Dunn, you should be listening to this because you would have known about the Google Fi problem with Google Voice and my solution for it had you listened. Talk to you later.